This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving weekend. I did. It was great to be home and, not have too much on the agenda. Nice. I like Thanksgiving. It's one of my favorite holidays. It's one of those where you just spend time eating, having fellowship with friends. And anyway, great weekend. All right. Well, coming up today, while his days in office may be numbered, the Obama administration appears to be committed to using every last moment to advance their liberal policy agenda by administrative rule and regulation. But Congress has said, not so fast. Texas Congressman Mac Thornberry, chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, joins me in just a moment. And can a law and order president bring back respect for those who keep the law and order? Retired Police Chief Greg Ferries is here to explain why police officers around the country are hopeful the Trump administration will hit the reset button on police relations. That's coming up here today on this edition of Washington Watch, and also your phone calls a little later here on the program. That number, 866-372-7234, jot it down. We're going to open up the phone lines a little bit later. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Love to read those emails and messages there at TonyPerkins.com. All right, with President Obama's days numbered in the White House. Yes, I like to hear that. But the outgoing commander-in-chief is looking to ram through last-minute midnight regulations to hamstring President-elect Donald Trump and to shore up his liberal legacy. Joining us now to discuss this, Texas Republican Congressman Mac Thornberry. He is the congressional representative of the 13th District. He serves as chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, the first Texan of either party to actually hold that position. Chairman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate you having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. You recently signed on to a letter to the Obama administration cautioning, along with several of the chairmen, cautioning against these midnight regulations that we can see forthcoming in the next 45 days or so. First, explain to our listeners what's meant by midnight regulations.
Well, regulations that come out at the last minute, and there are several kinds. There can be what we've talked about as executive orders or executive decisions that immediately order the bureaucracy to do something. There are other kinds that have to go through the whole regulatory process. You put out a draft, you have to get comments, and then it takes effect after a certain number of days. And we can undo any of them. But the concern is that it's just going to be a blizzard at the end. It will occupy a lot of time and effort for the new administration and for Congress. And it's just wrong to try to inflict a lot of things on the American people here in the waning days.
So is this kind of like at the last moment they're trying to flood the zone, knowing that your hands are going to be busy coming, hands are going to be tied coming into the new administration, a lot of things going on, and some of these things could slip through the cracks unnoticed just because of the volume?
Well, I do think it's a flood the zone sort of approach, and hope that something will go unnoticed, or hope that we don't really understand all the implications of something. So, again, the idea behind the letter signed by all the committee chairmen in the House was no last-minute regulations. You had 8 years to do this. We don't need it's not good for the country to have a bunch of this trying to sneak it in under the wire in your last days.
Well, Congressman, I know as the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, you have seen, a systematic approach of this in terms of what this administration has done to our military, trying to circumvent Congress and doing everything they can, either legally or illegally, through fiat of the White House, executive order policies. What's your greatest concern as you look over the next month and a half what this administration might do?
Well, I guess I would say the first step is to stop it from getting worse, which is what we're trying to do with this letter and some other actions that are going. But I think you're exactly right. There has been social engineering going on at the Department of Defense for the last 8 years, and it's going to take some time to remove that influence and to return the focus back to what it should be, and that is fighting and winning the nation's wars. Mm-hmm. And so whether it is making sure chaplains understand that they can do their job, or making sure that families in the military understand that they will be supported, you know, we've got a lot to do coming up. But I guess the immediate concern is, okay, let's not let it get any worse. And that's kind of where we are for the next 45 days.
Now, reportedly, there are 98 final regulations that are under review at the White House that, you know, it seems like there would be a time limit that, you know, when an administration is coming to a close, that they should be prohibited from doing certain actions that have no bearing on the present and are only prescriptive that would carry into the next administration. Is that something that's been discussed as a possibility?
Well, there have been conversations about how to prevent a president from issuing these orders, you know, throughout a president's term. But one of the law already says that if there is a regulation that comes in the last few months of an administration, then Congress can overturn it, and it cannot be filibustered in the Senate. So I think what you will see in the early days of January 2017 is the House and the Senate going through a number, not just the regulations that we haven't seen yet, but some right. of them going back for the past several months and passing bills that overturn those regulations by a majority vote. So that means you can do it with 51 votes in the Senate, send them to the new president, and so we can start to turn this avalanche of regulations around.
Yeah, that's a something that has been discussed in the last few weeks. I was not aware of that provision, Congressman Thornberry, where the Congress can take the, I think it is it back 120 legislative days, or it's a certain set period of time of legislative days, which actually goes back quite a ways when you consider legislative days. And does that pertain to just regulatory executive orders, or does that include any statutory provisions as well?
Well, it would not be statute. It would be regulations that have been formally adopted, and I believe it'll go back to roughly the end of May. So, for example, one of the most controversial has been this overtime, redefining what overtime is, who has to pay it, and so forth. That would be one of the candidates that, with the House and the Senate, with just a majority vote, could overturn that regulation and not have to go through the long period where you've got to put out a proposed change and a repeal of the regulation, have a comment period, and before it can ever take effect. So this deals with the formal regulations that have been implemented through that regulatory process. But there are a number of other executive orders and executive actions that the president just did with his signature, as he liked to say, with a pen. Those can be overturned on day one by a new president's signature. So right. I think the combination of repealing a bunch of these executive orders and the regulatory Congressional Review Act process can really give us a head start on peeling back some of what the Obama administration has inflicted on the country. Now to repeal Obamacare and some of the other things, that's a different sort of legislative right. process, but obviously that's part of the agenda too.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Congressman Mac Thornberry, my guest. He is the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, discussing what is a concern to many in Congress, the administration on their way out, pushing a number of rules and regulations that will have unintended consequences for consumers and for businesses, for Americans in general. I would think exercising that congressional ability to overturn these regulations, circumventing, obviously, as you mentioned, the filibuster provision where you only require 50 votes in the Senate, would go a long way in sending messages to further to future administrations that, look, you can do this, but look, here's a measure that's just going to wipe all that off the chart there if you do it. I think that would send a strong message if Congress exercises that authority and that right.
Well, I agree, and as a matter of fact, in the letter that you were talking about that all the committee chairmen signed warning about new regulations, it says specifically that if you do this, then we will use this procedure and overturn whatever regulations you come up with, to try to send that warning shot to the Obama administration, at least, that we're not going to put up with these last-minute trying to ram through your agenda that you have, you know, obviously not been able to do so far.
Right. And I would say, I would add that the American people rejected in this election.
Yeah,
they
yeah,
want
yeah,
the
I
country to
right.
go a different direction.
Yes, sir. No, I think that's exactly right. And so the combination of using this procedure that can't be filibustered and early on, hopefully day one, some of these executive orders being overturned, I think will send an important signal to the country that what you voted against or what you voted for is actually taking place. We had just before Thanksgiving, Vice President-elect Mike Pence came and visited with House Republicans and affirmed that very high on their agenda early days will be repealing these unconstitutional executive orders that touch on so many aspects of American life. And doing that, as I'm confident they will be a huge step in reversing what the country has dealt with.
There's a lot of work to reverse all that's been done. Congressman, we're almost out of time, but I want to switch gears. I'm glad you came on today as chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, an important committee. And as you pointed to earlier, the military has been under constant assault by this administration in terms of their social policy. But a major funding bill for the National Defense Authorization Act has been kind of hung up over an issue of religious liberty. Are we going to see the defense bill make its way through this year, and are we going to see that issue of religious liberty addressed?
I think we will see the bill make it through. I believe the religious liberty issue will be addressed, but by a new executive order. And as you know, the old executive order applied across the government. We can't fix that in a defense bill. It needs to be fixed. And that was the specific reference that Mike Pence was making to reform that. In the meantime, we're trying to get the troops a pay raise, stop the cuts and end strength that the administration is pursuing, stabilize the readiness issues. So getting that defense bill done now rather than several months from now is really important to stem the hemorrhaging within our military.
Without question. Chairman Mac Thornberry, thanks so much for joining us on this Monday afternoon. Great to talk with you.
You too, sir. Thank you.
All right. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. I was making reference to the Russell Amendment. We've had Congressman Steve Russell on the program talking about that religious liberty provision. All right, don't go away. We're back after this.
Every day, more schools around the country are giving in to the transgender agenda. Boys claiming to be female are already being allowed into girls' bathrooms and locker rooms. What can parents do to stop this disturbing trend from spreading to their children's schools? Family Research Council is now offering a new resource to help. A Parent's Guide to the Transgender Movement in Education is a concise brochure that can be downloaded at frc.org/gender. To order hard copies, call 800-225-4008. You'll learn valuable tips on how to talk to your children, their teachers, school board members, neighbors, and fellow churchgoers, and the steps you can take to prevent the advancement of the transgender agenda in your school. Again, the number is 800-225-4008 to request this brochure. Your gift of just $5 will cover the cost of shipping and handling, and additional copies are available for $1. Thank you for standing strong for the family.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. A recent British headline read, "Parents fear that religion will make their children outcasts." That should be an expectation rather than an excuse to not pass on one's faith. After all, Jesus warned that persecution is part and parcel of authentic Christianity. With eternal consequences in mind, how can we parents not do our best to pass on a real and vibrant faith? It's only nominal or cultural Christianity that doesn't accept the fact that for the authentic Christian, persecution is normal. We must be a people willing to pay the price of conviction. The Apostle Paul reminds us that it's not only a blessing to believe on Jesus, but to suffer for him as well. Are we convictional Christians standing no matter what, or are we conditional Christians standing only when convenient? By his grace and strength, God help us to stand. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster, a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we noticed with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at tperkins. And as I was making reference to there at the break, as we were talking with Congressman Thornberry of Texas, the religious liberty issue in the defense bill was the Russell Amendment. It dealt with contractors, which could be humanitarian. It could be a contracted priest, that they did not have to check their faith, the tenets of their faith, at the door of serving in the capacity of serving the Department of Defense. Now, this came about because of the Obama administration pushing the redefinition of marriage so that if someone had a natural view of marriage, they could no longer contract with the federal government. And so this was simply to rectify it. What's happened is the Vice President-elect, Mike Pence, met with Republicans week before last and assured them that they would take care of this by executive order government-wide, which is encouraging. And I spoke briefly with Vice President-elect Mike Pence about that. All right. Just last week, police officers were shot in Michigan and Texas, San Antonio, Texas, and St. Louis, Missouri. Now, this past year, there has been an unprecedented number of attacks on our nation's law enforcement. I think some 100 officers have been shot. And there has been this growing hostility that we've seen toward police. And you know what? I pin this, as I've talked about before, right onto President Obama. I mean, going back to the beer summit that he had, you know, that was in regards to Professor Gates back in July of 2009, where he was asked in a press conference about an arrest of Professor Gates. You know, who, I won't go into the whole story, but he basically said that police were acting stupidly and that there was this long history of police treating blacks and Hispanics differently than whites. And it was assumption. And that's been the case ever since. Every time there's a case, it immediately the police are the bad guys. And so police officers, police organizations are now hopeful that that trend will change, that the new administration, the Trump administration, will hit the reset button when it comes to police relations. Well, joining me to talk about this is my good friend Greg Ferries, former Baton Rouge police chief and sheriff of East Baton Rouge Parish. And he is currently still involved in law enforcement, and I think he has some views on this. Chief, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Good to be with you.
Well, are you hopeful that we may see a reset in terms of police relations as a result of a law and order president respecting those who uphold the law and order?
I am encouraged and I am hopeful, Tony. I think that the tone under in the Justice Department, under Obama's Justice Department, under Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch, has been almost openly hostile to police, and I cannot imagine that that won't change significantly under Senator Sessions once he becomes Attorney General.
I feel pretty confident, Will. I know Senator Sessions quite well. I mean, he has a background as a working as a U.S. attorney, working as Attorney General, law and order type guy. So I think he certainly will be supportive of law enforcement. But from a practical standpoint, Chief, what do you think the role of the federal government is in restoring? Is it simply a matter of using the bully pulpit, or is there legislation? What do you see as the main emphasis that this administration should take to support law enforcement?
Well, I think the administration, both in the person, the president and the attorney general, does have the bully pulpit, and that's been used against police for the last 8 years. You noted in your lead-in story about the Professor Skip Gates' arrest. We've seen for the past 8 years a president who is a constitutional law professor commenting with the authority of his office on cases in which the evidence is not even known yet. Just irresponsible, for lack of a stronger term. I can't imagine that you will see that. I think that if you look, Tony, at crime statistics, particularly violent crime statistics and specifically homicides in big cities, cities basically run by Democrats, Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, et cetera, what you see is you see a lot more violent crime over the last couple of years, and I do believe that that can be attributed in part to the reluctance of police officers to be proactive, to own the streets, so to speak, and that stems from a fear of being prosecuted for doing their job. You have seen high-profile prosecutions, investigations in Ferguson. You've seen it in Baltimore. You've seen it in other places, and most of those prosecutions have come to nothing. But those officers, before they were acquitted by a jury or not indicted by a grand jury, were basically convicted in the press and in the political world. And that's
right.
Very, very discouraging. You've been a cop, as have I, and if you're a 22, 23, 25-year-old officer trying to do their job, that's a huge hammer over your head.
Well, and it causes them to potentially hesitate when they're confronted with a situation where deadly force may be necessary, which could lead to either themselves being the victim of a crime, losing their life, or an innocent bystander because of that hesitation, because of this hostility that has been fostered by the political class.
Could not agree with you more. And as I was commenting to somebody the other day, in a lethal force seminar I was involved in, every decision to use deadly force by an officer is by definition a last second decision. If it's not a last second decision, then it's murder. No police officer wants to kill anyone. They all do it to, or with the exception of the very, very occasional and well publicized and justifiably dealt with bad cop that we read about, 99.9% of the officers don't want to take a life. It's the last thing they want to do, and so they wait until that last second. And as you point out, if they wait half a second too long, they're the victim
for the innocent bystanders.
Yeah. Chief, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us on this Monday afternoon.
My pleasure, Tony. Thank you.
All right, former Baton Rouge Police Chief Greg Ferries, as well as he was the sheriff of East Baton Rouge, the only guy to do both jobs. All right, not at the same time. Okay, when we come back, we got more to talk about here on Washington Watch and your phone calls. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, some important economic data this week. This is the end of the month, of course. End of a very important month. One of the things that we are going to get, we're going to get GDP number. So we're going to get the second. This is the second look at GDP. You might remember a couple of weeks ago, the first look was 2.9%. They're expecting 3%. By the way, there's no correlating numbers that back that up. There is some good news in the markets, a little bit of good news in the economy, but nothing that would really correlate to a 3% GDP growth. But I guess they think maybe we can give the president 1 year of over 2% GDP so that his legacy will only be 7 straight years of below 2% GDP growth. Consumer confidence number is coming out. Also, that ought to be very good. I expect just because of the election, this is a November number, that we should see that well above normal for this time, this go around. Then we get personal income, personal spending number later in the week. Two very important numbers. Personal income is expected to be up. Personal spending, this is for the month of October, expected to be up a half of 1%. We get pending home sales. That's an important number. That's expected to be down. Construction spending, and we are getting a manufacturing index number, which is expected to be up. But the big number is Friday, private non-farm payroll numbers. That's expected to be in about 170. That would be pretty good compared to the 142 we had last month. But 170 is nothing to write home about.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
All right, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, and glad you're here. Hope you had a great weekend, Thanksgiving weekend. Now we're officially into the Christmas season, Christmas carols. In fact, we got to work on that, some little Christmas music to come in and out of our program with. Maybe me singing a few Christmas carols. No, Randy saying no, that's not the answer. But we'll work on that, to get everybody in the festive mood. If the Democratic Party leaders in Washington care to know why Hillary Clinton lost, garnering the fewest electoral votes by a Democratic nominee since 1988, they might want to consider talking to David Beatrice. Now, he serves as the chairman of the Democratic Party, Mahoning County, I believe that's how you say that, in Ohio. Now, Beatrice blames Clinton's loss on the Democratic Party's caring, quote, more about where someone else went to the restroom than whether they had a good-paying job, end quote. Now, last May, he sent to the Clinton campaign a 1,300-word memo expressing concern about the campaign's lack of focus on issues of concern to blue-collar voters. Now, you would think that Clinton could have just gone back to her husband's campaign days when the message was, it's the economy, stupid. Well, I mean, apparently the banner they had over their campaign headquarters was, it's the bathroom, stupid, because that's all they focused on. And what's ironic is that this was the same time, in the same month, actually. The memo was sent the same month that the Obama administration announced a nationwide edict forcing every school to open locker rooms, showers, bathrooms to both biological sexes. However, the Clinton campaign apparently didn't get what Beatrice put in his memo, nor acknowledge the scores of groups, including FRC, who drew attention to the left's obsession with bathrooms. The same day the edict was issued, Hillary Clinton applauded it and even pledged as president to continue quote-unquote, the fight, the bathroom brawl. Well, and they took that on into their convention where they put it into the party's platform. Now, when you look at the Democratic Party, people are abandoning that party. Now, I'm not necessarily saying they're coming to the Republican Party. The growers, the rapidly growing affiliation is independent. Although the Republicans, I think, did well in this cycle. But here's what I want to talk about. You know, we always hear the liberals and the media saying Republicans are, you know, they're hurting themselves because they're focused on these social policies, da-da-da-da-da-da, marriage. When reality, all that the Republicans are doing is responding to the Democrats. It would appear, when you look at the polling data, where prior to the election, when you looked at state battleground polls, it revealed strong opposition to this the bathroom policy pushed by the administration. Now, a research survey commissioned by the Family Research Council, that's us, found that 2/3 of American adults were opposed to the edict, including nearly half of Democratic voters. Even some left-leaning pollsters showed that there was very little support. Only 36% of Ohio voters were in support of this locker room, shower room mandate. So what's driving it? This is what I think. The Democratic Party has been hijacked. Frankly, for conservatives and for Republicans, this is a good thing. But it's been hijacked by the gay transgender lobby that is now using the party to focus almost exclusively on their agenda. And as a result, they're shedding voters faster than a dog sheds their hair. I mean, they're falling off. And it shows in this last election, because actually the numbers show that there wasn't that much of an increase in voter turnout. On the Republican side, what happened is a decrease in voter turnout on the Democratic side, lack of motivation because of the agenda. So here's what I want to talk about this afternoon when we come back from this next break. Those that are registered as Democrats, probably not many listeners who have voted for Democratic candidates, although maybe so. And that's great. I want to hear from you. But here's what I want to know. I mean, do you see the Democratic Party as being hijacked or taken over, where they're focusing disproportionately on this radical sexual agenda? Again, I'm not going to tell them to correct it, because I think it actually is beneficial, because as long as they pursue that, I think you're going to continue to see people leaving the Democratic Party. I mean, just like this is a chairman of a county in Ohio, the Democratic Party, saying that Hillary Clinton lost because she was so focused on bathrooms and not focused on getting people good paying jobs. I mean, think about that for a moment. I mean, this whole transgender bathroom that the Human Rights Campaign has been pushing, I mean, affects about 1% or less of the population. And that has become the focal point for the Democratic Party? The president? Man, I think they're off the rails. But again, it could be a good thing. If the Republicans do it right, they could be in the majority for a long time. All right, folks, when we come back, we're going to take your phone calls, 866-372-7234. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch and your calls right after this.
Announcing Jonah Had a Whale of a Time, random true stories to encourage and inspire by J.J. Jasper.
Trying to write with a broken pencil is pointless.
From the author of the best-selling book Moses Was a Basket Case comes the much-anticipated sequel Jonah Had a Whale of a Time, with more of the same brand of humor that makes J.J. fun to listen to and to read.
If you're from a dysfunctional background, consider this. every baby chicken came from a broken home.
American Family Radio President Tim Wildman calls J.J. Jasper a gifted storyteller.
He's a gifted storyteller.
And Tim says get two copies, one for yourself and one for a friend who needs to be inspired.
My wife told me to stop impersonating flamingos, so I had to put my foot down.
It's Jonah Had a Whale of a Time. While supplies last, for a suggested donation of just $15.99 at afastore.net or call 877-927-4917.
Have you ever thought what comes after the box?
Shoe boxes have been packed, and now it's time to send children on the greatest journey.
The greatest journey is an incredible opportunity to take children and then give them kind of an overview of the scripture.
American Family Radio and Samaritan's Purse invite you to help us provide the Greatest Journey Discipleship Program to 12,000 children. Learn more about the Greatest Journey at AFR.net and listen Tuesday, November 29th to AFR.
Dysfunction in Washington is not the problem. The real issue is a lack of leadership.
When it comes to economic policy, our government seems to be out of control, and Christians could have a role in restoring it.
Christians will change the direction of America if we step up.
Visit afastore.net to find the DVD Surviving Government Economic Policies with Dan Celia, as well as all the resources of the AFA Cultural Institute.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
You are listening to Washington Watch, and I am Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. Twitter is at tperkins. And the phone number is 866-372-7234. And we're talking about the Democratic Party. Hillary Clinton focused, you know, so intently on radical social policy like bathrooms, ensuring that, you know, people can use whatever bathroom they want. Democratic chairman complaining that this is what cost them the election. They were focused on what bathroom someone was using rather than creating good-paying jobs. So has the Democratic Party been hijacked by the gay transgender lobby? We're going to go to Texas first, where John is on the line. John, welcome to Washington Watch. John, you there? Hey, John, go right ahead.
Yes, Tony, I appreciate you taking my call. There's no doubt it's been hijacked. By whom is the question? I think the gay agenda is just part of the total socialist group that's trying to hijack or has hijacked the Democratic Party, which raises a concern in my mind. Only one time in our American history has a presidential election been thrown into the Congress. And could that be why they're doing all the recounts? I just want to throw that in the picture. I'm getting concerned about it. They've not accepted this election as being sound as far as the Democrats are concerned.
Right. Well, I think, John, what they're trying to do is to raise questions about the validity of the Trump victory in his administration, to cast a cloud of doubt, saying he did not have a mandate, he did not receive the popular vote. But again, this is the, you know, this is the wisdom of the founders in setting up the Electoral College, which prevents populist states like California and New York basically dictating the outcome of the election, you know, the where liberals tend to congregate. Look, they don't have to be happy with the outcome of the election. I would not be happy if Hillary Clinton had won the election. I mean, I don't know that I would have advocated that you have a recount. I just would not. I would never have claimed her as my president. And I have no problem with liberals who don't want what Donald Trump. You know, they don't want to call him his president. Not my president. I understand that. Now, I do have issues with those out there rioting and protesting in the street who didn't even vote. I mean, that's just kind of silly, if you ask me. And I have problems with colleges like, where's the one up in Massachusetts, that Amherst, where they took the flag down. And they're no longer flying the American flag at Hampshire College because they were not happy with the students weren't happy with the outcome of the election, and they had taken the flag down. They had burned it right before Veterans Day or the night before Veterans Day. And so the college decided they're just not going to fly the American flag for the foreseeable future. Well, you know what? Again, as an individual, if an individual wants to do that, that's, you know, if they don't want to fly the American flag, you know, that's fine. I, frankly, and I've talked about this on the program before, I have not flown the American flag for quite some time in front of my home. I have flown George Washington's flag, an appeal to heaven. Now, when a president takes office that loves this country, I will fly the American flag again. Now, some may say, how can you do that? Well, it's because this president has just about destroyed this country. Now, having said that, I did that as a private individual. I did not do that as a president of a college. It wasn't a public institution. It's my personal home. And I, people cannot, they're free not to accept Donald Trump as a president. That's fine. They can challenge it. But, John, what they're trying to do is simply undermine Donald Trump and his presidency. That's why they're pursuing this recount. It's not going to go anywhere. John, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate you calling in. Let's go to Tennessee, where Shirley is on the line. Shirley, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. I think your logic is correct. I think that the Democratic Party has to have been hijacked for people to be so foolish to think that a bunch of women would vote for Hillary, who's saying she wants to get them raped and killed. So, and the second thing is, I'm questioning Hillary's motive on this recount because I don't believe she's foolish enough to think that she could actually turn what has happened around and actually be the winner of it. I think perhaps she's going around collecting money. They've raised over $4.2 million, as I understand, so that she can pay her bail when she gets in jail, if Trump will change his mind and put her in there. Or maybe they're collecting money so that she can pay herself back for the millions she spent on her failed campaign. But I just find it very interesting that she's doing this, which makes absolutely no sense. And like you said, we'll get nowhere. And she knows it.
Interesting theory that the motivation behind it, the I don't think she needs the money. I mean, I think she's their foundation is doing quite well, and I think they'll continue to rake in lots of money in their speaking gigs. Although I think it's going to be more difficult for them because when you're out of power and there's no power on the horizon for you, people are less likely to give you money. And I think that was the pay-to-play scheme that she had when she was Secretary of State, that the alleged, which evidence was pretty strong, that's why people were giving money, because there was something to offer. They don't have anything to offer now. And there's nothing on the horizon that they would have to offer. So I think that gravy train is going to get kind of crusty. I think it's going to dry up. Shirley, thanks so much for the call. You know, I remember, you remember the last debate, and I was there in Las Vegas, where the question was asked of Donald Trump, would he accept the outcome of the election? And he said, well, we'll see, not necessarily. And all, I mean, there was a firestorm in the media. That was the focal point coming out of that debate. It wasn't his discussion of the Supreme Court. It wasn't even a discussion of ending late-term abortion. It was the fact that he might not accept the outcome of the election. And he was criticized every which way possible. Interesting. The media is not criticizing Hillary Clinton for wanting to recount and questioning the validity of the election. Could it be a double standard? All right, let's go to California, where John is on the line. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, hi, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. What do you think?
I don't know if I would accept that the gay and lesbian agenda has hijacked the party per se, although I do think they are getting a disproportionate share of the messaging.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really think is happening is that the Democrat Party is participating in the politics of division. And to do that, they've got to divide so many little parts of our country, you know, different nuances, that they are losing their ability to bring a clear message. There's too many things to address, and so their message just is not clear.
Well, at some point, I think you're correct. I think what they have done is they have gone to certain segments that may feel disenfranchised or trying to foster that sense of being disenfranchised. How do you build a unifying message with a group that is disunified?
That's going to be a challenge for them because they're not talking, at least in my hearing of the message that they are bringing, they're not talking about how to take the country forward with a legacy for the next generation. They're talking about how to take the country forward and stopping doing some of the things that we have done historically. And I don't think that style of messaging will ever be able to unify the party. They're going to have to come back around at some point and deliver a message that shows how America can go forward with strength in our business capabilities and in our ability to defend ourselves to a point. And along with that, try to say on the fringe of it, how they can continue appealing to the fringe groups or, you know, gay and lesbian lobby is not fringe so much anymore. But they're going to have to find a way to message that on the fringe of their main message in the center. And I don't know how they're going to do that at the moment. I'm not savvy enough in politics. It's just my perception is that they don't have a message because they're too busy appealing to too many factions in the country that they have divided.
I think it's going to be impossible with the current messaging strategy to do that because you're absolutely right, John. And what they've done is they are appealing to small special interest groups to try to cobble together a majority. The problem with that is that when you are casting a vision for a small majority, for instance, I don't think that the gay transgender agenda is anywhere near mainstream. I mean, the polling still says that while people might tolerate what the courts have done, they don't embrace it, even on the issue of marriage. Recent polling shows the number has not changed in terms of a majority of Americans still seeing marriage as a union of a man and a woman. Now, they've had for the last 8 years the power of the government to basically bully and force this agenda. That ends. And so I think it's going to be much harder for them to keep this coalition together because they're not casting a broader vision that would appeal to all Americans. And I think what Donald Trump did, I think you could have done more effectively, but he did it well enough to win, is that the overarching theme of making America great again, while it sounds simplistic, actually communicated a pretty enticing message. Because number one, it touched on what the majority of polls have shown, that Americans feel like America is on the wrong track. Upwards of two-thirds. So I do think that he cast, well, it may be simplistic, he cast a vision that many Americans gravitated toward. Now, in addition to that, he also addressed some of the specifics of those that shared that broader vision. For instance, he appealed strongly to evangelicals on religious freedom. He responded to small business owners about ending regulation. But all of that was under the banner, if you will, of making America great again. So it was an overarching vision. John, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening today. I've got to work in a couple more calls here. Let's go to Virginia, where Liz is on the line. Liz, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thank you so much for taking my call. And, you know, having this platform is just so important. I have a couple things I wanted to, that I had concerns about. I wanted to get your take on it. One is, I think there's something much more sinister as far as this vote counting. I really don't think that it's so much about her thinking that she's going to win or he's going to lose or whatever. I think they're trying to drag out the vote counting because it's supposed to all be said and done by the 13th of December. And if they drag it out and drag it out, so what happens if after December 13th it's not done yet? They keep dragging it out. Before you know it, it's inauguration, and he can't be inaugurated because the vote thing is not straight. It's not been resolved. So what happens with that? The other thing I wanted to say is I want you guys to listen. You know, my mouth just fell open listening to C-SPAN Saturday night, November 26th, about 9:30, C-SPAN. I think we really need to have a heads up on what's going on. There was an organization that was speaking for Black Lives Matter, and there was also all the other people. They were bringing up Ferguson and all this kind of stuff, you know, just looking for kind of like a scapegoat to, you know, destroy property and everything. And one of them that was a speaker stood up behind the podium and said, there is going to be a bloodbath. Look for a bloodbath 2017. And I was just sickened by this, that anybody would be able to get on TV, on C-SPAN. This happened about 9:30 this past Saturday. The speaker was speaking up that there's going to be a bloodbath.
I'll look into that. And also, we're up against the end of the program here, Liz. I'm also going to get one of these election attorneys on to kind of walk us through this process of the recount, the timing, the meeting of the college, and the voting, and all, because, you know, there's a lot of things floating out there. And I think some of it, there's some legitimate, we should always be concerned. Trust but verify, as Ronald Reagan said. But I think some of it's just, we don't need to be anxious about all these things. Let's get the facts. But Liz, I appreciate the call because that prompted me to do that. I'm going to get one of these election attorneys on to talk about is walk us through this process, the timeline, what has to happen, what could happen, that sort of thing. Because I think we need to... I think the facts will put a lot of people at ease, but then there's some other things we need to be watching for. And I'll also look up this program that was on C-SPAN and see what that was all about. All right, folks, out of time for this Monday, but I want to thank you for joining us, and I want to encourage you to join us again tomorrow. Lord willing, we'll be back again, and I hope you will as well. Until then, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6. Where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, no retreat, no surrender, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.